came to Tehran for the 9th Joint Permanent Commission. This is where we spoke about agreements, about agriculture, about media cooperation, precisely why I'm here as the Minister of Information. And we are looking forward to cooperate in co-productions of films, of documentaries.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
We have suffered and we continue to suffer. Our countries are pariah states according to the Western world. We are actually portrayed as people who don't know human rights.
Yeah.
And yet we fought for human rights. We fought for democracy. Mm-hmm. For over 100 years, our people in my country, the black people of Zimbabwe, suffered under the colonizers.
Yeah.
No freedom. There was no single black person in my country who voted for a president or who knew what was happening in the capital of Salisbury.
Yeah.
So Rhodesia was for a few white people. So we know what it is to fight for democracy. We know what it is to maintain and make sure that we take our constitution very seriously. We walk our constitution, we talk our constitution.
Yeah.
Rights of our people. People are the most important asset the Republic of Zimbabwe has, and as such we are doing everything despite the sanctions to make sure that we give our people in Zimbabwe a decent living. We have got everything you can think of in Zimbabwe.
You talked there about agriculture discussed during this joint commission. Now, I recently read that Zimbabwe is actually one of the few African countries, actually one of the only two African countries which are self-sufficient now in wheat production. Now, how can Iran and Zimbabwe collaborate more in terms of agriculture, and especially considering the fact that Iran is actually advanced in terms of production of agricultural machinery?
I want to give you a background first before I even go into what we need to do now.
Yeah.
The war of liberation, which was fought by the Zimbabwean people, the bone of contention was the land.
Yeah.
The land which was taken away from our forefathers.
Yeah.
So most of the land in my country during Rhodesia, before independence, was owned by a very few white commercial farmers.
Yeah.
So at independence, we negotiated for land and that didn't happen as we expected.
Mm-hmm.
Then we ended up having to go for our first land reform.
Yeah.
And this was only giving back the people their land.
Yeah.
And that is the time when the whole Western world portrayed Zimbabwe as inhuman, as undemocratic.
Yeah.
And yet all what we did was to give our Zimbabwean people land.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of sanctions were then imposed on Zimbabwe. All the equipment, tractors, which we were using, we were importing from Western countries, they stopped. All the ones we had in the country needed spare parts.
Yeah.
We were not able to import the spare parts. They actually strangled all the financial institutions, were not allowed to give money to the farmers.
Yeah.
But despite all that, we have continued farming. When we speak to Iran, we realize that they have moved. They have the science and technology has moved in this country.
Yeah.
They are producing equipment. We want to continue to mechanize our farmers because we know labor is a difficult way of farming.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that we do have irrigation, whether it's sprinklers, whether it's furrows, whether it's center pivot, also to make sure that irrigation is done efficiently.
Yeah.
Thank God we have a lot of dams in my country. So we have harnessed water.
Yeah.
What we need, the technology we need from the Iranians is to make sure that we irrigate efficiently.
Yeah.
So that our crops...
Smart irrigation. Yeah.
Smart agriculture.
Yeah.
So that we achieve very high yields. And this is what we are very keen to work with Iran with. To that effect, our Minister of Agriculture, Dr. Masuka, will be coming to Iran to make sure that what we have been discussing can now be operationalized and implemented.
And I think on that note, Zimbabwe now will become the bread basket of Africa like it was before.
Like it was before.
Yeah.
That's exactly where we are achieving.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we are able to feed the whole nation.
Yeah.
We want to export because we have got the land. We have got the fertile soils.
Yeah.
We have hardworking people.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why we can't be the bread basket of the whole of Africa and the
beyond,
world.
Beyond, yeah.
Yeah. So, in fact, if I may say, if you walk into certain supermarkets mm-hmm. in UAE, for mm-hmm. example, and in Hong Kong, and in many other places, you will find the crops which are grown in Zimbabwe in their supermarkets. And we want to do that also in Iran. We want to be able to export what they don't have here mm-hmm. so that at least our trade will then grow. We want to make sure these are our friends.
Yeah.
Iran is our traditional friends. We've come a very long way with our friends. And Zimbabwe considers our friends very seriously. We are supported by Africa. IU has been in the forefront.
Yeah.
The SADC, the Southern African region, has been in the forefront to make sure that sanctions are removed.
Yeah.
Sanctions are only there to strangle our economy. But we are saying we are not sitting back. We are not going to cry. We are not cry babies.
Yeah.
We are thinking outside the box.
And you're talking about sanctions. Now, we know that Iran is also facing what they call crippling sanctions from Western countries, and especially the U.S. Zimbabwe is also facing sanctions from the Western bloc. So how are these two countries collaborating to, ensure that these sanctions are completely dismantled and they don't affect the economies of these two countries?
You are very correct. We have got a lot of similarities. Iran is under sanctions from the West. Zimbabwe, Zidera, was sanctions which were imposed on Zimbabwe. And these were mainly to strangle the economy, to make sure that no international financial institutions will give any loans mm-hmm. to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
We are doing a lot in terms of what we call sanctions busting.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, we are learning a lot from Iran, how they have actually been sanctions busting, how they have survived, how they have grown their economy, their science and technology, their media. We are very impressed by the Press TV, for example, which is reaching a number of regional countries.
Yeah.
And we obviously would like media cooperation
where
we can tell the world the truth.
Yeah.
A lot of fake news have been created about our countries.
Yeah.
It is important for everybody out there to know that Iranians are very democratic people. Zimbabweans are very democratic people who care so much about the human race, who love to be friends to all and an enemy to none.
Yeah.
Our countries are open for business. My president's mantra is Zimbabwe is open for business.
Yeah.
And his mantra, again, is we as Zimbabweans, we want to be a friend to all and an enemy to none.
Yeah.
With all the God-given mineral resources we have, lithium, which is talked about, we know with this climate change, with the more and more electrical cars are being manufactured so that we clear all this pollution, and the lithium which we are talking about making the batteries to make these cars move, is found in my country.
Yeah.
About 10%, if not 20% of the lithium which is needed in the whole world is found in Zimbabwe. We are top 10 when it comes to platinum, gold, diamonds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so with all these God-given minerals, and for your information, we have got chrome. We are making steel.
Yeah.
As we speak, one of the biggest Chinese companies is building a steel company in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And this is steel which is going to allow the world to continue developing economies, build buildings, bridges, everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in Zimbabwe, we are saying, Iran, come, let's work together. There are a lot of opportunities to cooperate.
So we now take a short break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back to Africa Today. We have a special guest from Zimbabwe, the Minister of Information. Thank you, Madam, for being with us today. Now, before our short break, you had talked about lithium. And recently, Zimbabwe made a very historic decision whereby it banned the export of raw or unprocessed lithium. Can you briefly explain about this policy and how it's going to impact on the people of Zimbabwe?
Henia, first of all, I was bragging about all these natural resources we have in our country. In the past, they've been benefiting a very few white business people and others who are coming to just shortchange Zimbabwe. In the advent of the Second Republic, under the stewardship of President Dr. E.D. Mnangagwa, he completely started off by saying, we need to make sure that the natural resources which God gave us in Zimbabwe should benefit the people of Zimbabwe. The importance of value addition, the importance of beneficiation became the most important job which the Ministry of Industry and Commerce had to look into. Mm-hmm. The Ministry of Mining and Mining Development are also looking at that. We are making sure that we create jobs as we explore these natural resources. Mm-hmm. We are making sure that we don't export them as raw material. Because when we export them without value addition, it means we are exporting jobs in Zimbabwe.
And I think as Iran and Zimbabwe move closer to collaboration, there's a lot of disinformation propaganda from Western media outlets. So being the Minister of Information in Zimbabwe, how can Iran and Zimbabwe collaborate to counter this propaganda and present a positive narrative for the people of Iran and Zimbabwe and Africa in general? So how do you think we can collaborate in this?
As a Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, my mandate is to make sure that I educate the people inside and outside. I inform them factually about what is happening in my country. I also make sure that I entertain people. We've got a great culture. We know that because of the land reform, the Western world has really portrayed Zimbabwe as a pariah state. And that's not true. A lot of people who have visited Zimbabwe, they come to my office and they are shocked by what they would have heard before visiting Zimbabwe. Zimbabweans are very peaceful people. It's a very calm, tranquil, as with the good weather. The people are always friendly. There is so much which can benefit the world from Zimbabwe. And what we're looking for as an independent country is win-win situation. We are actually saying in the media, we need to remove the polarization. Remember, the colonizers had lived and lived well in our country, renegating the biggest population of the black population in my country. We are there to educate our youth, our young people, to understand that what we have in Zimbabwe, the sovereignty we have, was gained through an armed struggle. And a number of our generation perished during that struggle. It was not easy. Of course, there was a time when we relaxed and we didn't talk about it to our young generation. It is now when we are working hard through the Second Republic to make sure we come up with documentaries. We need Zimbabwean people to understand our friends. Who is Iran? What is that they did during our struggle? Where is our friendship? Where did it start from? And how can we deepen it economically? How can the two countries benefit from each other? There is a lot which Zimbabwe can learn from Iran, and there's a lot which Iran can learn from Zimbabwe and benefit. We want to make sure that all our farmland in Zimbabwe is utilized. We want to make sure that all our yields from our farms are very high up there. We want to make sure that our studios, so that we give the right product to the people. We want to make sure we move from analog to digital. It is important. We know that our young generation's consumption of information is totally different from before. before everybody, families can watch TV together. Yeah. They would read newspapers together. But we know that the young generation, they are most of the time stuck to their gadgets, smartphones, social media. With the advent of social media, my job as the Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services has been to make sure that we open up the airwaves. Yeah. For a very long time, Zimbabwe had one national broadcaster. Yeah. But through the last 4 years, because of the astute leadership of our president, we have opened up airwaves. We have licensed a number of commercial televisions. Mm-hmm. We have also licensed a number of community radio stations.
Yeah.
And all these new TV stations and radio stations, they need content. So we are here in Iran seeking co-production of content together.
Very good.
We have the same history. There is a lot of films which are done by the Iranian government, Iranian TV. We want to make sure that we work together and showcase the best part which has been done by Iran so that our Zimbabweans know that we are not the only ones who have been put under sanctions.
Exactly.
And as such, we shouldn't sit back and cry, but rather we should strive to do the best under sanctions. Mm-hmm. We are very impressed by what we have seen here at Press TV, mm-hmm. the amount of work they are doing despite the sanctions.
Yeah.
We have seen the equipment which they are using, their state-of-the-art equipment, state-of-the-art studios, and the cameras are state-of-the-art cameras. This is precisely where we want to cooperate and make sure that all our TVs, which we have licensed, and the national broadcaster, which have been there, they are all well-equipped in terms of equipment, latest equipment, so that we give the best quality which can be sold globally.
And, Madam Minister, you earlier talked about the beauty of Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And we also know that Iran is also a beautiful country. So I think there is a missing gap of tourism between the two countries. Many Iranians visit other countries, and I think maybe few of them know about Zimbabwe. And on the other hand, maybe we have Zimbabwean tourists visiting other countries. So how do you plan to, you know, spur the tourism industry between the two countries for people to visit each other?
In fact, tourism is one of the major agreements which have been discussed, because that's critical.
Yeah.
And precisely why I'm here also as the minister in charge of media, because information is power.
Yeah.
All these agreements for them to be realized, all these cooperations and partnerships to be realized.
Yeah.
I know the tobacco company from Iran visited Zimbabwe a week ago, mm-hmm. because again, we are very good producers of tobacco leaf, especially the Virginia and Bali. Mm-hmm. And our tobacco is very considered the best quality and also sweet. And many countries actually import it to blend their cigarettes.
Yeah.
So we are actually saying for all this to be realized, people-to-people relations have got to be improved.
Yeah.
We need Iranians to know who Zimbabwean people are. And Zimbabwean people need to know who are Iranian people.
Yeah.
What does the government stand for?
Yeah.
It is important to be done. And all this can be done through information sharing.
Yeah.
This is why we are talking about our news agency, our national broadcaster, our commercial televisions, our community radios.
Yeah.
We need to have that media cooperation so that we send out the waves for the last 3 days during the 9th Iran-Zimbabwe Joint Commission. We have discussed all this, and media cooperation has been at the top because we want to push the agenda to our people.
Yeah.
We are democratic governments.
Yeah.
We want our people to understand why there is this joint partnership, why the government feels that there is this 9th joint partnership, is because there's a lot to benefit from it. So information is power.
Yeah.
Tourism.
Yeah.
We have one of the best tourist destinations in the world. You know that the Victoria Falls is in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, Zambezi.
And that is the seventh wonder of the world.
Yeah.
When we talk of co-production of films, of documentaries, we have got some of the best sceneries in the eastern part of the country.
Yeah.
The English, when they were still colonizing Zimbabwe, they used to call it Little England.
Yeah.
There, it was a beautiful sceneries.
Yeah.
We are talking of the Victoria Falls, Moso Oatunya. Of course, the Victoria Falls was a name given.
River.
Yes, the name which our people, our Zimbabwean gave, was Moso Oatunya.
Yeah.
And this is, you see, loads of water falling, kilometers and kilometers, three times bigger than Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
So this is what we're saying. And when we talk about the Big Five, we have really done a very good job in terms of conserving our wildlife.
Yeah.
We have some of the best national parks where our tourists can visit, see the Big Five. And this is a very safe country, very safe. You can move around without any worries of anything.
And definitely we're going to see that in the near future of
exchange. We are inviting you.
Yeah,
we are inviting.
Yeah.
We have already extended an invitation to our partners.
Yeah.
And of course, as you are aware, the 9th Joint Permanent Commission happened in Tehran this time. And we had a high-powered delegation. And that was a demonstration from the president of Zimbabwe to say everyone should be in Tehran to discuss. We had people from all science and technology, education, agriculture, even tourism, media, industry and commerce, because there's a lot we can do together. And the next joint partnership commission will be in Harare, where we have extended an invitation.
There.
And we would like media people to be there, to be talking to our Zimbabweans about how they consider this world a very level-headed, with level-headed people
we have
who
a lot
want
to
work together.
We have a lot to talk. Unfortunately, our time is up, but I think we'll really need to link up again and discuss more on this. Thank you very much, Madam Monica Motsvangwa, Zimbabwe's Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting, for your time and for granting us this interview at Press TV.
Henia, I just have to thank you very much, and I want to thank Press TV, and I've been very impressed by the tour I took around.
Yeah.
You are doing a great job. Continue to do the wonderful work for the humankind.
And that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. We hope you enjoyed the show. Goodbye for now.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story. The title of today's story is The Old Duck. There was once a man who had a duck. While the duck was young, he was made much of, but when he grew old, he was driven out of doors. So he went and lay outside the fence. And a wolf came up to him and said, "Doggy, why so down in the mouth?" "While I was young," said the dog, "they made much of me, but now that I'm old, they beat me." The wolf said, "I see thy master in the field. Go after him, and perchance he'll give thee something." "Nay," said the dog, "they won't even let me walk about the fields now. They only beat me." "Look now," said the wolf, "I'm sorry and will make things better for thee. Thy mistress, I see, has put her child down beneath that wagon. I'll seize it and make off with it. Run thou after me and bark. And though thou hast no thee left, tussle me as much as thou canst, so that thy mistress may see it. So the wolf seized the child and ran away with it, and the dog ran after him and began to tousle him. His mistress saw it and made after him with the harrow, crying at the same time, "Gabriel, Gabriel, don't you see? The wolf has got the child." Then the man chased the wolf and got back the child. "Brave old dog," said he, "you are old and toothless, and yet you can give help in time of need and will not let your master's child be stolen." And henceforth the woman and her husband gave the old dog a large lump of bread every day.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. I am Beta at your service, and we are at Lantern. Again, Lantern here with a new story, a beautiful one. So, we heard the story of the poor and pitiful dog without any teeth. So, I'm going to go through the topic. A friend in need is a friend indeed. As you know, friendship is one of the most important part of everybody's life, because we as human beings are some social creatures that we need friends. We have to make good connection with other people. So let's define this friendship. Friendship is a state of enduring affection, esteem, intimacy, and trust between two people. In all cultures, friendships are important relationships throughout a person's lifespan. As you all are aware, friendships play an important role in healthy human development and adjustment across the lifespan. Friendships exist in practically every stage of development, although the form they take varies considerably with age. The formation phase of a friendship is the transition from strangers to friends, which is a beautiful part. You know, sometimes you make friends out of an act of kindness, exactly like the story we had today. You know, as an act of kindness, they made good friends with each other. They helped each other. And I think this is the key point. We may face many obstacles, many difficulties, many problems, and so on in our lives. Life is not always la vie en rose. It's something more. And these challenges and difficulties will make you stronger. And despite the fact that you are strong as a human being, don't forget that we are all social beings. So we have to strengthen our connection with other people too. And as you know, during this phase of being friendship, individuals engage in interactions to get to know each other and to forge the effective bond that characterizes a friendship. Both youth and adults have a tendency to form friendship with others who are similar to them. Even young children are attracted to peers of the same age and gender. So, we got to this point that similarity is one of the most important part of finding a friend. You don't build a friendship with other people unless you feel some similarities with each other.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
And I think one of the most important thing that will make you close to each other is kindness. In the last episode, we talked about kindness so much, which is one of the most beautiful parts of everybody's life. It may seem like a cliche because, I don't know, cliches are some true things that we tell them again and again and again. And because this repeated way of telling these cliches, we make them cliche. But it doesn't mean that they are not of high value. Kindness may seem like cliche, but actually it's an important part of everybody's life, especially in making friends. And even in Islamic documents, especially the Holy Quran, we have many verses about friendship, connection, communication, and finding the right people to communicate with. Let me recite this beautiful verse of the Holy Quran. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا عدوي وعدوكم أولياء تلغون إليهم بالمودة. O you who have faith, do not take my enemy and your enemy for friends, secretly offering them affection. So this beautiful verse is telling us that choosing the right person to be friend with is really important. I mean, sometimes you choose the enemy to be friend with. Don't accept yourself. Don't expect yourself to not to be like your friends after a long time. So I think this is a way to mention the value of having good connections with other people. And also, we have this beautiful verse in Holy Quran too. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَتَّخِذُوا الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا دِينَكُمْ هُزُوًا وَلَعِبًا مِنَ الَّذِينَ أُوتُوا الْكِتَابِ. O you have faith, do not take those who take a religion in derision and playing from among those who were given the book before you, and the infidels as friends, and be wary of Allah, should you be faithful. Up to here, we were talking about friendship and the benefits of having good connection with other people. I've told you some ways to nurture your connections, to have lasting friendships with others. And at last, I want to tell you one thing. Remember that it's never too late to develop new friendships or reconnect with old friends. Investing time in making friends and strengthening your friendships can pay off in better health and a brighter outlook for years to come. Thank you, my dear friends and dear listeners, to listening to this episode. I bid you farewell and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul
qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means
today I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree though we learn. يا إله كل شيء ومليك يا رب.
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah.
يا خالق كل شيء وورثه.
Today's great tip, what is one of the things that happens when we do our ubudiyah and it is done in a sincere manner? So, dear friends, we are talking about one of the effects which happens to us when our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah is accepted by the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, the acceptance of our ubudiyah has certain effects. But on the other hand, there's a caveat, and that is that we must always remember and keep in mind the possibility that our ubudiyah is not accepted by the Almighty Allah. Some people might become proud, or they might become arrogant in thinking that their ubudiyah and their servitude and their worship and their obedience to the Almighty Allah is accepted. Now, an interesting point, if one becomes arrogant or one becomes proud, one has this istikbar within themselves, this arrogance is created, then they should know that their worship and their obedience has not been accepted by the Almighty Allah. And so this acceptance of the worship to the Almighty Allah is something that is gauged based upon the effects that it creates. In a previous program, we talked about how the Holy Quran says that the salat, the daily prayers, they surely prevent and diminish and prohibit one from lewdness and promiscuity and profanity. And so we said if we are not being prevented by those things, then it means that our salah in the least has some kind of problems with it. And of course, if our salah has problems with it, to the extent that it does not create the intended benefits and effects that it should be, then we can be very sure that the Almighty Allah is not accepting that broken salah and worship as well. So we turn it around and we bring it to our situation here, right? And that is one of the other gauges, as of course we had said in one of the previous programs, was that when our ubudiyah is being accepted by the Almighty Allah, then there are certain signs and certain effects which come about. One of those signs and one of those effects is that a mechanism is created within us which prevents us or guides us so that we do not commit sin. We do not disobey the Almighty Allah. Now, this mechanism, which we have called a mechanism, and another terminology, it is called a internal messenger. It is called this Rasul, which is in the batin of an individual. And of course, it guides one between right and wrong and how to make decisions and so forth. And so this light is created within ourselves. Of course, this doesn't, happen overnight. It takes years of effort, of diligence, of motivation, of eagerness. It takes years of sincerity and paying attention. But of course, the fruits and the benefits which come about through this servitude and this obedience and this ubudiyah to the Almighty Allah, of course, is unimaginable in its sweetness and its joy and its exhilaration. And so this being one of the things that happens when our ubudiyah is done in a sincere manner. شربنا على فكري حبيبي مدامتا ساكرنا بها من قبل لأن يخلق الكرم.
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Brothers and sisters, ikhlas in our actions
in everything that we do, not only in our prayers, which we're doing qurbatan Allah, but even in our social interactions. If a little bit there's nafs in it, a little bit looking for name and fame. Let me give you an example. Sometimes this happens in Muslim organizations even. In work that we want to do for the name of, in the name of God, in the name of religion. Once Bahlul was watching some individual, he's making a masjid. So Bahlul came over to him. He said, "Who's this masjid for?" He said, "Of course, the masjid for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala." He says, "Is that the case? Let me put my name on the masjid. Bahlul's mosque." And the guy said, "No, why should, my name should be on it. I should be, I'm doing all of this effort. Lack of ikhlas. I want my name to be on it. I'm doing Islamic work, but I want there to be somewhere, some notification, some people know who's making all this effort. I want everybody to know, everybody to recognize." Outwardly, very much Allah, ikhlas, Islam. Inwardly, what is it? Is it really ikhlas? Does it matter when I'm doing Islamic work? Does it matter if somebody else takes credit? Somebody else's name is on it. Does it matter to me? Will I still do the work? Somebody else is going to get credit. They're going to benefit. People will know them. They're the mu'mineen who did such and such. Do I still participate with the same amount of ikhlas and with Bahlul and this other guy? If you're doing it for God, God knows. If it's done for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whoever's name is there, does it matter? God knows. If it's for Him, it shouldn't matter. The guy, when he heard Bahlul say that, he said, "Look, whatever name you want to put on it, Bahlul's mas, somebody else's mas." He realizes there's no ikhlas there. They said that eventually Bahlul ended up putting an ayat of Quran on it. Right? But the idea of, from a practical point of view, is sometimes the reason that I won't cooperate with others, can't work with others, can't do projects with others. Part of it is sometimes that we have a difference of opinion. Part of it sometimes maybe I want credit. I want my name to be there. Let me give you an example from some of the shuhada, the ikhlas that they had. There was a shaheed and his name was Ismail Daqaiqi, Ismail. So what happened is that the brothers noticed, they said that when we would come into our bunkers at night, we would see that our boots had been waxed. Ismail Daqaiqi is the commander of the entire base. We would come into our bunkers at night and we see that somebody has come in the night and is waxing the boots of the other mu'mineen. And nobody knows who this is. Ikhlas. Middle of the... Let no one know. The more I can do work for Islam and nobody know that I've done anything. I'm an unknown soldier of the Imam of my time. I'm not on the front. I'm not in the... Right? But God knows. That's what's important. They said later we checked. We find out after checking. It's our commander.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير يا الله يا رحمن حقق أمانينا
Welcome back, dear listeners. In continuation, we were talking about earlier, which was this idea of what happens when we have a sincere ubudiyah, a worship, a servitude, and obedience to the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, we were just talking about one of the measures and one of the things that happen out of the many things that happen on this journey of spiritual wayfaring, which, of course, the whole purpose is to gain nearness to the Almighty Allah. Now, we had said that, of course, this light is created within one's heart, this torch, if you will, that guides one between right and wrong and really prevents one from disobeying the Almighty Allah and prevents one from committing sins. Now, here, can we really regard ourselves to be among the musallin? Musallin meaning those who are the people of prayers, the people of salah. When we have been engaged in this salah, which is of course a great worship for decades, but we don't have this light within us, we don't have this mechanism within us, which helps us to differentiate between right and wrong. How can we call ourselves to be these people of worship and these people of ubudiyah? How can we call ourselves an abid, a servant of the Almighty Allah, when we aren't able to discern between right and wrong, or we aren't able to, on a general level, prevent ourselves from committing sins? It means that despite decades of worship, our worship and our ubudiyah was such that it did not have an effect that it was supposed to. And so how can that kind of a worship and that kind of a ubudiyah be acceptable to Allah when it had no effect? Does it not mean that that ubudiyah that we had done was merely a superficial thing, a shell, without any inner substance? Would it not be incredibly, incredibly unfortunate that on the day of resurrection, our deeds and our list of actions are handed to us, and we see that there's nothing written on it of good? And at that point, when we are told to hold and check our own account, there's nothing that we'll be able to do. And so, of course, we must try our best in the end and in the beginning to try to focus on our ubudiyah, pay attention to our ubudiyah, be sincere in our ubudiyah, and not just once, but every single time. Yes, it is difficult, but the rewards and the results are truly worth much more than the amount of effort that we put into it in this temporary world. For the reward is everlasting life and prosperity with the nearness of the Almighty Allah and those who are near to the Almighty Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., three lawyers for Donald Trump recently appeared before a federal grand jury as part of the special counsel investigation into his possible retention of national security materials at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New York Post has covered this story and tells us more. Three of former President Donald Trump's attorneys have recently appeared before a federal grand jury investigating his mishandling of classified documents, and investigators want to bring in at least one of the lawyers back for further questioning, according to a report. Trump lawyer Alina Haba reportedly appeared before the Washington, D.C.-based grand jury last month, according to CNN. Alina Haba is the third member of Trump's legal team, joining Evan Corcoran and Christina Bobb, that has testified before the panel investigating the 76-year-old former commander-in-chief for obstruction and criminal violations of the Presidential Records Act, the news outlet reported. Alina Haba has been Donald Trump's lead attorney in New York Attorney General Letitia James' civil case against the former president and his family for allegedly financial fraud. CNN reported that Alina Haba personally searched Donald Trump properties for Trump Organization documents that Letitia James issued a subpoena for, but didn't find any. Her search included looking through Trump's residence and private office at his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach, Florida, that was raided by the FBI in August of last year. Evan Corcoran and Christina Bobb are believed to have played a larger role in Trump's mishandling of classified materials. Evan Corcoran drafted a statement signed by Christina Bobb in June that declared that Trump's team had fully complied with a subpoena seeking classified documents being housed at Mar-a-Lago. The FBI recovered hundreds of pages of classified materials after its search 2 months later. Federal prosecutors have asked the judge to force Evan Corcoran to provide additional testimony. Prosecutors allege that Corcoran was used by Donald Trump in furtherance of a crime or a fraud, which would overcome the shield of attorney-client privilege, according to a CNN report. Special counsel Jack Smith, appointed by Attorney General Merrick Garland in November, is leading two federal investigations into the former President Donald Trump. The Seattle Times has also covered this story and tells us more. Federal prosecutors overseeing the investigation into former President Donald Trump's handling of classified documents are seeking to pierce assertions of attorney-client privilege and compel one of his lawyers to answer more questions before a grand jury, according to two people familiar with the matter, adding an aggressive new dimension into the inquiry and underscoring the legal peril faced by Donald Trump. The prosecutors have sought approval from a federal judge to invoke what is known as the crime fraud exception, which allows them to work around attorney-client privilege when they have reason to believe that the legal advice or legal services have been used in furthering a crime. The fact that prosecutors invoked the exception in a sealed motion to compel the testimony of the lawyer, Evan Corcoran, suggests that they believe Donald Trump or his allies might have used Corcoran's services in that way. Among the questions that the Justice Department has been examining since last year is whether Donald Trump or his associates obtained justice in failing to comply with demands to return a trove of government material he took with him from the White House upon leaving office, including hundreds of documents with classified markings. In May, the Justice Department issued a subpoena for any classified documents still in Donald Trump's possession, after he had voluntarily turned over an initial batch of material to the National Archives that turned out to include almost 200 classified documents. In June, Evan Corcoran met with the investigators and handed over more than 30 documents in response to the subpoena. Another lawyer for Donald Trump, Christina Bobb, then signed a statement asserting that a diligent search had been conducted at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's residence and private club in Palm Beach, Florida, and that there were no additional documents bearing classification markings. Christina Bobb has told investigators and others that Evan Corcoran drafted the statement and that she added some caveats to it, seeking to make it sound less ironclad. But when the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago in August of last year, FBI agents found more than 100 additional classified documents. The affidavit submitted by the Justice Department to obtain the search warrant said that there was probable cause to believe that evidence of obstruction of justice would be found in the search. Evan Corcoran recently appeared before a grand jury in U.S. District Court in Washington and is believed to have asserted attorney-client privilege on behalf of Donald Trump in refusing to answer certain questions related to his representation in the documents investigation, according to three people familiar with the matter. It remains unclear what questions Evan Corcoran sought to avoid answering by asserting attorney-client privilege or what crime the Justice Department cited in invoking the crime fraud exception in its motion to Judge Beryl Howell. The chief judge in the Washington Federal Courthouse, who oversees all grand jury matters. But after his appearance in front of the grand jury, Evan Corcoran received notice that the Justice Department was seeking to use the exception to break through his assertions of privilege, the people familiar with the matter said. Howell, who has consistently decided in the government's favor on privilege issues surrounding Donald Trump, will ultimately rule on the department's request about Evan Corcoran. She will be stepping down from the position of chief judge next month. The push for Evan Corcoran's testimony is another sign of the aggressive effort being made by Jack Smith, the special counsel overseeing the investigations into Donald Trump, to secure testimony. Jack Smith is guiding both the investigation into Trump's handling of the classified documents and the inquiry into Trump's efforts to remain in office after his election defeat in 2020, and how they led to the 6th of January 2021 assault on the Capitol. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Three lawyers for Donald Trump recently appeared before a federal grand jury as part of the special counsel investigation into his possible retention of national security materials at his Mar-a-Lago resort, according to two sources familiar with the matter. The lawyers, Evan Corcoran, Christina Bobb, and most recently Alina Haba, were involved in efforts to compile documents that had been subpoenaed. They remain among a small number of people to have searched Mar-a-Lago. Alina Haba appeared before the grand jury in the documents case in recent weeks, the sources said, a notable development given she is not a member of the legal team defending Donald Trump in that criminal matter and has represented the former president in civil lawsuits. The details of Alina Haba's testimony are unclear, though she was asked about her search last year of Donald Trump's office at Mar-a-Lago, from where the FBI recovered documents marked top secret just weeks later, after Donald Trump was subpoenaed by the New York State Attorney General Letitia James in a separate case. In Letitia James's civil case against the Trump family and their business for alleged financial fraud, Alina Haba has been the lead lawyer and told the court she had searched Mar-a-Lago and other properties for documents. The move by the special counsel to summon Ali Nahaba before the grand jury makes her the third known member of the Trump legal team to do so, after Evan Corcoran and Christina Bobb also made appearances in early January, and potentially the only lawyer who had gone through Donald Trump's office at Mar-a-Lago. Evan